Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So Israel has announced that it intends to capture Gaza and that its 2.1 million population will be moved to protect it in what would be a major escalation in the conflict. The Israeli cabinet also approved a plan to deliver aid to Gaza through private companies, which would end a two-month blockade, the UN says has caused severe food shortages. Well, to discuss all of this, I'm joined by Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent. Alistair, thank you for being with us. This plan to occupy Gaza, to move it population again. What details do we know about it, and where would these people be moved to?
So, I mean, the difference now is that with the Israeli military plan is firstly to increase the number of soldiers they have on the ground in Gaza by a number of thousand, and then they are planning to move into areas and hold those areas, as opposed to what they've been doing previously, which is moving in, fighting Hamas, defeating Hamas in those areas, and then withdrawing. They feel that they've been playing, therefore, a bit of a game of whack-a-mole, and they now need to remain in those areas and hold them. But, of course, that now comes with a real fear that those parts of Gaza will be held indefinitely, perhaps even permanently. And to the second part of your question, the plan is to push the population of Gaza down towards Rafah, right in the south. Now, not only is Rafah, and I've seen it with my own eyes, completely destroyed, I mean, almost entirely leveled, but secondly, you know, population of 2.1 million people in a very small area like that will be a recipe for a much worse humanitarian crisis than we're already seeing.
Mm-hmm. And then on the aid question, I mean, the Israelis have said they plan to deliver aid to Gaza using private companies. The UN, other aid agencies, saying that would be a breach of basic humanitarian principles. They're saying they won't cooperate with that. So what is the Israeli logic?
I'm not sure how the delivery of aid through private companies is necessarily sort of a breach of, you know, humanitarian standards, if in theory the Israelis could ensure that, you know, sufficient aid got into Gaza. I think the question is how's that done? And to my knowledge, the Israelis haven't formulated, a plan. I mean, there are some suggestions around, as you say, a private company might be used. What they essentially, the Israelis, want to try and achieve is a way of delivering aid, but making sure that it doesn't go to Hamas. But that is incredibly complicated. Using a private company, whether it's American contractors or others, will come with it its own problems as well, and it is deeply, deeply flawed, particularly if you try and bypass the agencies, the UN and others, who have many years of history of operating inside Gaza, have the infrastructure still within Gaza in order to distribute the aid, and so at the moment it's nothing more than a sort of a plan on an envelope, as it were. Mm-hmm. They have not yet said how it exactly will work and, crucially, when it will come into force.
And how has this Israeli blockade of aid impacted people there since the last ceasefire broke down in March, a couple of months now?
Well, what we saw during the ceasefire was genuinely a big influx of aid into Gaza. It's sufficient aid to feed the population, to restock hospitals and medical centres with the medicine and they need and fuel, etc., etc. But ever since the blockade came back into force, which was middle of March when Israel broke the ceasefire, obviously what aid is in there has gradually been whittled down and whittled down to a point where now food is pretty scarce, and we're seeing very long lines of people desperate for food every day. The quality of food that they're able to get is pretty minimal. And then other supplies like electricity, fuel and medical supplies, as I say, are equally diminished.
Mm-hmm. So then the role of Donald Trump in all of this, there's some analysis that he's disengaged from the process now. Has this emboldened the Israelis, or, you know, is his, I mean, he has said they want the aid to get in, but they don't want it to go to Hamas. And on the wider plan of clearing Gaza, is he implicitly giving his consent, the Americans' consent, to Benjamin Netanyahu to go ahead?
I think the role of Donald Trump in the White House is crucial for three reasons. Firstly, because really America is the only country, the only government that the Israelis will listen to or be truly influenced by. Secondly, I think he's disengaged. I mean, we just don't see the same level of attention on the war in Gaza as we saw both from the Biden government, but from the Trump administration when they first came into power again back in January. They're now distracted with Ukraine, with talks with Iran about a new nuclear deal, etc., tariffs, you know, what have you. Gaza is not at the top of their list any longer. And, you know, if you like, the fact that they have got their attentions turned elsewhere, in some sense, that is kind of an implicit sort of go-ahead for the Israelis to do what they want. And, you know, thirdly, I would go back to that moment in February that I'm sure we all remember, when Trump stood next to Netanyahu in the White House and revealed this kind of extraordinary idea that America would own Gaza and all Palestinians would be evicted to somewhere else, not determined. What that did, and I personally, I don't think Donald Trump has the patience to see through a plan like that, whether or not he truly believes it or not. But what it did do is it legitimized, in the eyes and the minds of many on the far right in Israeli politics who hold significant power within the government, it legitimized a lifelong dream that they've had to reoccupy Gaza. And they have heard it come out of the mouth of the US president, and now they want to act upon it.
Mm-hmm. He is, Donald Trump is heading to the Middle East, isn't he, on the 13th of May. Some Israelis have suggested there's a window of opportunity there to agree a new ceasefire deal. But Hamas have said only in the last number of hours that they feel there's no point now because of this plan in speaking to Israel. So, I mean, the hopes would seem very, very dim indeed that there will be any move on a ceasefire, Alistair.
I mean, the window of... If there is a window, then at the moment the window is shut and pretty much locked. There hasn't really been any meaningful negotiations ever since the ceasefire was broken by Israel. There have been talks behind the scenes, but no substantial movement on it. Hamas now saying they're not going to talk as long as the starvation goes on in Gaza. That's their words. And this window until Trump comes to the region of, what, 9 days or so? I mean, that's pretty short. And the other thing I would say is that we heard from Benjamin Netanyahu last week saying that the priority in Gaza now is supreme victory over Hamas, not the release of the hostages, but supreme victory over Hamas. And the implication of that is that if Hamas released every single hostage tomorrow, all 59 of them, dead and alive, then Israel would still continue fighting in Gaza, because ultimately, under the kind of, you know, according to the words of the current prime minister and others in the cabinet, they will continue fighting Hamas until Hamas is defeated. And we all know from history, from recent history, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan or elsewhere, defeating an organization of the likes of Hamas does not happen quickly. It takes years, and ultimately it will take a political solution.
It's an incredibly bleak situation as we speak this morning, Alistair, but thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Alistair Bunkle there, Sky News Middle East correspondent.